found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
sick performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is the traitor,
suffering, Aaron Chief O'Brien. So much suffering.
So O'Brien must suffer.
My molar's missing.
And they didn't even give you any Novocaine or anything.
No, they just pulled that right
out.
They
just pulled it right out. They didn't even put any gauze in.
Welcome to the Suffering Games.
Yes, that should be a whole series. Actually, it sort of is a series.
So, we're talking today about Deep Space Nine episode Tribunal.
It's the second to last episode of season two.
Yeah, so we get the beginning suffering of...
I think this is the first the O'Brien Must Suffer episode, yeah. Officially. There might have been one in season one, but I don't remember all of season one all that great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But this is definitely one of the earlier Ryan Must Suffer episodes.
Yeah, it's an ongoing theme for Deep Space Nine. I don't know why they picked him.
I wish they would have done a lot more of those. And I love the Mirror Universe, but I think some of the Mirror Universe episodes almost got like...
Got a little old.
Because like, it's just... Where they went with a timeline and the Deep Space Nine, like, there's no Federation anymore. It's all like this, like, just post-apocalyptic thing. I'm just like, I just feel like there wasn't... so much they could do with it without the Federation, without the evil version of the Federation being there anymore.
Yeah, it's not as fun, for sure.
But somehow they still be able to make the Defiant. Even with the plans, they're just able to make that ship.
They still had the Borg to fight, so...
I guess.
Brian suffers.
Well, maybe not, because Picard would...
Wouldn't have met Q?
Wouldn't have met Q, and wouldn't have flung into the Delta Quadrant.
Maybe you met Q, and Q just wasn't smitten by Picard and crew.
Well, I mean, I think the totalitarian federation, whatever, I can't remember what they're called in the regime, like, it breaks up before TNG era.
Oh, does it? Okay.
I think it did, because, like...
I don't remember. I remember the ones from Deep Space Nine, and I know, obviously, the original series, and then also the Enterprise version, but I don't remember.
Like, I think the backstory is Spock. Basically, Kirk's speech to Spock. Like, Spock like tries to stand up and do what Kirk says, but it just totally falls apart, and the Federation collapses. Their version of the Federation collapses.
Gotcha.
And that's why everything's all post-apocalyptic in DS9 era.
Right. Well, so, we're not talking about that.
No, we're not. But we did get some interesting news. I think this morning, actually.
Yes.
We saw somebody, photographs come out.
Yeah, somebody posted some Instagram pictures of production of the Discovery.
Klingons on lunch break, I guess.
Ketchup and fries.
Gah!
No gawk. I didn't see any gawk.
No gawk? No. People are like, I think people are not sure it's Klingons. It's kind of pointed to Klingons, and they showed the picture of the armor, but the armor doesn't look on the people. It doesn't look the same as it did in that still shot from the production video.
Yeah, it definitely looks different.
The production video looks like a more detailed, modernized version of what you see in the motion picture era Klingon armor and TNG armor, but just more detailed, more spikes, more ridges,
and the heads are all bald. And the ridges go all the way back in the, down their,
around their spine. Sort of like the motion picture Klingons. But what I'm saying, the armor, the still shot of the armor looks like the motion picture forward Klingons. The armor wearing on the actors looks more like bone. It looks more like, they look like orcs, like from Lord of the Rings.
I was also thinking the armor from the insects from the Zindis.
Yeah, sort of. It didn't look like that Klingon armor they showed in that production photo. So I'm like, maybe they're like my hope is that they're like the whatever the Klingon equivalent to Remans are. Like they're like the sister planet, you know, that they're.
You hope.
I hope, because I don't like the way they look, their faces. I mean, none of them have hair, and some of them have really weird elongated heads. Like they don't look.
Yeah, they are.
They don't look
elongated.
Like Klingons
at
all.
Yeah, they're very different. Yes, interesting, because I, you know, when that was posted, all of a sudden it blew up on a lot of Facebook Star Trek groups, and some people are just not having it.
I'm not having it.
I don't mind it. It doesn't bother me that much. I mean
if they were to go with the JJ look for the makeup, I didn't mind the JJ look where they had all the like the rings and piercings and everything. But like that was just one of them. Like, why don't any of them have hair? Like, I remember Archer going through, like, how they lost their ridges, but I don't remember hair loss being part of that side effect.
Well, that was always the big contention about TOS and then everything else, how that changes when you got to Christopher Lloyd. It's definitely different, and I don't remember. I think you were talking on the same thread was with Bill Smith.
Yeah, I posted in our group, too, but, yeah, I saw you. No one posted on mine, so I went to where other people were talking. Thanks.
Thanks, Aaron. No, I think I saw
there was other people talking about it first.
Yeah, I saw it, and they were talking, and some people were flipping out other people. I was just like, you know, Star Trek's been around for 50 years, you know, and obviously we keep changing, you know, like, and we've talked about this in our Klingon four-parter.
Yeah.
We said, and you were mentioned, like, did anybody get all angry when they revamped the Klingons? I said, I don't remember anything from that. Like, I don't remember anybody being upset, anybody making a big stink about it.
Well, they all look like humans in TOS, so I think people were probably like, oh, this is cool, they look like aliens now.
Yeah, and I also think we didn't have the internet, so even if anybody was going to complain, it'd be through snail mail. And who's going to actually sit there and write a letter like, I did not like the makeup you put on Christopher Lloyd and Search for Spock. You know,
great Scott!
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I do think that, you know, we have to change up the look here and there.
I mean, like, updating the look a little bit is fine. Like, making the ridges look different a little bit. Having some bald Klingons, that's fine, but everyone was bald. And some of them, I think only some of them had the elongated top of their head. I'm just like, well, why is their head elongated in that weird way? I don't know. I'm just kind of like, I'm not digging it. It doesn't.
I'll grant you, it doesn't have the classic
it's
look.
It's a horrible looking photograph, too. It's really grainy. Like, the colors are off. So, I mean.
Well, it's an Instagram picture, so what are you going
to
do?
Oh, they probably put, like, the worst filter they could on it just so they were allowed to post it. So that's probably why it looks so bad.
It's all blown out. I don't know. It didn't bother me that much. I love the old look for Klingons, of course, but I'm kind of, like, thinking, like, well, let's see where they take this. Could be bad, could be good.
Well, I mean, like, it all comes down to if the story's going to be good. I mean, that's really what's going to come down to if the show's good or not.
Right.
We can complain about the aesthetic look of it all day long, but that doesn't change what the story's going to be.
And we got different looks from little tiny things we saw from our Andorians.
Well, the preview makeup, they showed their antennas are a lot longer, but I'm like, that's fine.
Right.
I mean, as long as they still wiggle around like they did in Enterprise, I'm cool with them being longer.
And
I think the Andorians have multiple sexes, like more than two.
Yeah, so, there's four.
So
really bizarre.
So, like, you know, this could just be a different sex of Andorian we hadn't seen, so I'm fine with that. But Klingons, we know they're just two sexes, and these look completely different than what we've seen before. So I'm hoping they're the Klingon version of Remans. I've got my fingers crossed.
So maybe they're like some kind of modified, like, you know, like super soldiers or something.
But I would love to see like some like mixed Klingons, like Klingons with no ridges, mm-hmm. with Klingons with ridges, like just so they can have like some people had the disease and people didn't.
That'd be cool.
I think that'd be kind of fun to see a mix. That way, it's like an homage to the original.
Right.
It'd be an interesting idea, I think.
That's another good point. Thank you for bringing that up, because at this point, we would have Klingons that would look more human.
Yeah.
So
infiltration Klingons. Although, like, Kirk seemed to always know they were Klingon just by looking at them, even though you couldn't tell that they were. I mean,
they had those gold. They had those gold shirts.
The gold sashes. That's how you knew they were Klingons. Yeah. I'm like, really? Is that all you need?
Yeah, I don't know.
Keep a tribble in your pocket to make sure. Are you excited to see me? Or is that a dribble in your pocket?
This is my pubic hair. I just don't trim it.
I don't trim it. It's sticking out real bad.
Anyways, so cool. I I was exciting. I, you know, to see the picture and that we're seeing some action, some traction going on with this. So
yeah, I just hope they're not Klingons. But
I think they are, but I bet you there's some explanation. I hope they give it something.
I hope so, because this is like everyone's what they announced like a year ago. So they're saying it's still the Prime timeline. Well, I'm like, and I've been saying this for like 4 or 5 podcasts now. I don't think this is really going to be Prime. I think this is going to be a soft reboot. And the more I keep seeing, the more I'm thinking it's going to be somewhat of a reboot.
I'm kind of inclined to believe you on that and kind of take your side on that. I mean, who knows? We'll have to see. Because this is the same thing I keep saying. All they got to do is just get some super fan to walk on the set and or even their planning rooms and say, okay, this is what we're thinking for this. You know, and get some, you know, big, geeky, nerdy Star Trek guys like us to walk in and go, excuse me, in Enterprise, that would not happen because Captain Archer.
X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, because Captain Archer gave him their DNA to fight this disease. Have you guys even watched the episodes?
Exactly. Like, I just like, ugh. I mean, like, if they're going full on reboot, just come tell us.
Just
please.
Say we're full reboot. This is why I think, this is my idea that.
I think they're scared to say it because of all the backlash because the JJ reboots.
Maybe, but
there is a lot of backlash.
Remember my theory that I think that somehow Discovery goes
back in time,
and maybe something they do messes up the timeline.
They fixed the disease that Archer gave them and made them all bald. They introduced a new thing, a new pathogen that makes them bald.
Who knows? Or maybe they just go to an alternate reality.
Maybe. The Mirror Mirror Universe.
Where Klingons look like. I don't even know what they look like.
I don't know. Someone like
space orcs.
Someone linked a picture of another alien from Star Trek, I think, that they looked like. I can't remember what alien it was. I can't remember what show it was. I just remember a thing on the forums where they posted a picture of some other alien. And they look a lot more like that alien than.
It's funny because there's a lot of people from like the original Star Trek groups who are like, nope, I'm never watching this show now.
Really?
Yeah, it's like, nope.
They're just like, I'm going to watch. I mean, like, that's silly just to not watch it because of the way it looks. Because when it comes down to it, the looks doesn't matter. Is it going to be good storytelling? Is it going to be good Star Trek at the heart of it? That's what matters to me.
I know. We've gotten into this more than once, but
I'll still complain about the way it looks until I see it, and you know, maybe it'll look better on a non-Instagram crap filter setting, maybe. But just the way that picture looked, it just didn't look great.
You gotta wonder.
Yeah, it's got me thinking. But I mean. Like, again, aesthetics has nothing to do with how good the show is going to be.
Right, exactly.
But before we get into Tribunal, which we were hinting at before, we actually have some more submissions from our 100th episode that we didn't get to play last time. So we'll go ahead and play, and we got one to play and one to read. So we'll go ahead and start with the audio one first.
Hey, guys, it's Robbie from Artful Gremlin Productions. You know, Couldn't Be Models, Nerdy Nomicon, several other shows in the works. But this isn't about me. This is about you guys. Congratulations on 100 episodes. Seriously, well done. Well done. In honor of your 100th episode, I've composed a very, very small list of other names that you could, you know, expand your show to. Let's see. What's the first one I have here? You could decide to create a second podcast called Girdles of Glory, you know, as a tribute to William Shatner. Classic, classic man right there. Stardate. If you guys had it in you, you could create a Star Trek-themed dating show. Always a sound idea in this world of reality television and dating shows. And finally, you could create another show devoted to Star Trek and give it the name that it should have had, Planet Trek. Because the show's called Star Trek, but they never visit a star. Not one. In all of the series is not a single star. I don't get it. Anyway, enough of that. Seriously, guys, once again, congratulations on 100 episodes, and I hope you guys have a few hundred more in you, because there's a lot of Star Trek to be covered, and there's a lot that you guys haven't covered yet. So congratulations, and full speed ahead, I guess. Is that the right IP? Set phasers to awesome. We'll do that one too. Anyway.
Thank you so much, Robbie, for sending that in.
Very nice. Yeah, I don't know about Stardate. It's a nice idea, but I think it'd be a very limited crowd.
We'll have to get a lot more girls to come on the show for a new Stardate.
We're gonna have to really work this.
But As far as revisiting stars,
they have visited stars, but they never landed on a star.
No, they don't land in a star.
That's
but
kind of impossible.
They get the shields from the Ferengi that let them like hang out in a star's ionosphere.
And
the Klingons also do an attack when they shoot some stuff into a star and kill some Jem'Hadar ships.
And Archer goes star diving with his buddy in the progenitor.
Oh yeah, they go into that special ship that lets them like bounce around a star. I'm not sure what stars they are, but the one star they had visited at least twice in very close proximity is our own star.
The old the soul. Sun.
Yeah, the sun.
The old sun.
Where they slingshot around it a couple times to go back in time. That's about as close as they get to stars with the red ships.
And what was that one that...
They did in TOS, where they got the guy flying his airplane.
Yeah, no. that one. And then wasn't the one with Crusher where she goes and uses the star to hide behind... I don't remember who she's fighting. I got it. It's a long time ago.
I think it was the Borg. I think was hiding from the Borg, and she used the metaphasic shielding that the Ferengi guy on a previous episode showed them how to use.
Right.
They forget about it forever.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody wants to hear about Shatner's bra size.
But I mean,
or girdle size.
If we go to the the Nickel City Con and sit on his lap, maybe we can lift up a shirt and see what size his girdle is.
Give him a titty twister
and a hug. Oh. No, nothing against you, Shatner.
Thank you for everything, Mr. Shatner. Titty twister. Scream.
Con! That's just like default scream. Yeah, thank you so much for sending that in. Those are interesting names. I think the next podcast, if we ever do a separate podcast, will probably be more general geekery.
Geekery or fuckery. Something to that nature.
Something like that, probably.
General fuckery will be our podcast name.
Search for it on iTunes in a year or so. Maybe it'll be there. And of course, we'll let you know if we do start a separate podcast. But
totally unemployable people.
Yes,
put that on your resume.
That's the best resume piece ever. I've run this podcast for like years.
General fuckery.
What do you mean? What do you mean this isn't a legitimate name?
It's not family friendly.
Why not? Anyway, we also got an email from Film Dumpster.
Oh, cool.
Gentlemen, I apologize for not getting to you in time for your 100th episode, but I wanted to share it with you anyway. I've had the opportunity to interview a few cast members of Star Trek, both TOS and TNG, for Film Dumpster. I've spoken with George Takei, Marina Sirtis, Denise Crosby, and Walter Koenig. And it looks like I might have an interview with Shatner lined up, fingers crossed. Marina Sirtis, Denise Crosby, and George Takei were all very pleasant and incredibly enjoyable to speak with. However, as great as it was to speak with Walter Koenig, he's a bit of a curmudgeon, to say the least.
Huh.
He wasn't 100% on board with the interview at first, so I had to do some explaining of who we were and what we do, and write off a list of celebrities we've interviewed in the past, according to George Takei. When I got to his name, he became visibly annoyed and said, "I can assure you that mentioning his name is no way to convince me. I've always heard..."
Oh my god!
"I've always heard there's no love lost between them, but I can definitely confirm it. Congrats on your show for number 100. I should note, however, that Film Dumpster Podcast has you beat by a few dozen. We have an Academy Award winner and one of our hosts, Tom Curley, but you have us beat in that you actually have listeners. Take care, Jeff Heller."
Well, Jeff was a great guy. I've met him multiple times, actually, on the... Buffalo Comic Cons, and he usually comes around with his film crew, and they do interviews. I think he interviewed me once too, actually.
Cool. He didn't link me your interview for some reason.
No, that was a long time. That's a long time.
But he did link some of the other interviews, which we'll throw in our show notes for you guys.
We should post them on the.
We can throw them on
the Facebook page too.
We can throw them on the Facebook page too,
just for everyone's entertainment.
Yeah, but just in case you missed it there, I don't want to. Yeah, I think scroll down.
The ones
the list.
I have seen him do is Denise Crosby and Mira Citrus.
She tastes citrusy.
Two grapefruits in my mouth.
Because she got her grapefruits at hand.
And he did. He said Walter Koenig. He was having a hard time with him, and he said because he mentioned George Takei.
Well, George Takei, he had a hard time with him. He mentioned George Takei to help, get some kinship going
to ingratiate himself.
I've interviewed other celebrities. It's not like you're the only one. And then he's like, doesn't matter if you interview George. That name's not going to impress me.
I thought him and Takei were friends.
I guess he blew out his communicator too.
Ooh. Yikes. Thank you, Jeff. That was very nice of you to send that in. Obviously we've talked to Walter Koenig, but it was more of a very subdued talk. So, and it was really quick. I mean, it was probably 20
minutes.
It
was, I think, a 25-minute interview. It was mostly, we had Todd Chante, his writer, who was also named Walter, and Walter Koenig all together. So,
right.
It wasn't a lot, but I mean, they were all just focused on talking about Captain Pike as a show. And so we didn't really get to talk with Walter Koenig. But I mean, we didn't have to say, hey, look, we've got all these credentials behind us, because we had none. It was our ninth episode.
Fifth or sixth show. Yeah. I don't remember.
Well, Walter Koenig was a couple episodes after the first time. So
yeah. Yeah.
It was under 10, I think, when we had Walter Koenig on. So it might have been 11. I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a long time, because this is episode 101, boys, guys, girls, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a long time. But yeah, we did talk to him. We didn't have the vetting, and he was perfectly fine to be there, because he had shot Todd, saying, hey, look, we're going to do this podcast.
Right, Pike. Right.
So I guess he was all on board for that. So
yeah, maybe next time we'll have to, chase him down.
Maybe.
So cool.
Hey, you were on our podcast once before. Why don't you want to do it again? Please, please, please.
We'll see what happens. Well, so we're going to talk about the Deep Space Nine Tribunal. Interesting thing. Directed by Avery Brooks.
Yeah. Cisco time.
Cisco time.
And he just doesn't like Armin Shimerman, so he doesn't appear in this episode. He apparently doesn't like Cyrek Lofton either, because Jake also doesn't appear in this episode.
Maybe it was just written that way.
Maybe.
And talking about writers, written by a guy named Bill Dial.
He doesn't like those characters.
Bill actually wrote a couple. He did not only just Tribunal, he did the other Deep Space Nine, The Alternate, where he got into the backstory of Odo. And then also he wrote Voyager. One of the great episodes of Voyager is Eye of the Needle, where they send the wormhole message to the Romulan scientist.
Oh, yeah, the one from the past, so it didn't matter.
But it's still an awesome.
It was a cool episode.
It was an awesome episode. I really dug that one, because it was so, different.
And it was, I think, first season, too. So it was that's really cool. Then it's he died, before we even launched, so it doesn't even matter.
So wild, but it's a great idea. It was, anyways, we're not talking about
it. But too bad the messages didn't come back in time so they could warn them not to go in the first place.
Oh, by the way,
yeah,
you should ship named Voyager.
Yeah, don't go do that, plot hole.
So anyway, so as we talked about, this is a Miles O'Brien-centric episode. O'Brien is going on vacation, and we get to see him in the beginning. He's at ops, and he's making sure all his
affairs are in order.
Yeah, and basically, you get the sense that he does not want to go on this vacation.
No, he is scared of Keiko.
She's
very crushing his balls the entire time.
Let me crush your balls.
I got the Asian torture trap. It's fine. I'm not sure why I use Russian accent for Keiko.
We use the nutcracker, and I put them on your testicles.
It's what the musical's about, yes?
Well, they finally force O'Brien off the out of ops and say, hey, just go on your damn vacation. It's time to go.
I love how he sticks his head back up. He's like, oh, wait, one more thing. And they're go away. And he ducks back down.
They should do more of that.
That must have been a massive set for them to be able to do stuff like that, for them to go up and down.
I know, but they should do that all the time. just a little peek through. Before they go on, is boss on deck? Just look around real quick. Oh, damn, he's here. So O'Brien, he's leaving to get onto the runabout where him and Keiko are going to go on a vacation. And
bumps into an old friend in the corridor.
That's right.
Loses one of his pads, because I don't know why they need 16,000 pads. I guess they didn't figure memory would be good enough. I mean, my iPad's enough for a whole bunch of movies. I'm pretty sure their text will fit fine on one, but,
Yeah, so he runs into his old friend Raymond Boone from the Rutledge, and they were in prison together.
Yeah, on Sepulchre 3.
Yeah, where they were during the Cardassian War.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what, you know, what have you been doing? You know, and he's like, well, I quit Starfleet after all that shit. And then he's like, well, I stayed in because of that shit. And you're like, well, okay. And then he's like, I got to go. I'm late as it is.
My wife's going to ride me even harder. Oh, wait.
And then so he says goodbye to him. Unbeknownst to him is that Boone is actually recording his voice to get some voice recognition patterns recorded. So
he can, like... Man, he must work really fast. He gets the message. He gets the voice. He modulates it how he needs it to do. Mm-hmm. He has the code somehow to get into the weapons locker, even though he just talked to the guy and just got his voice recorded. He's got the code somehow. Gets in, beams the stuff to the shuttlecraft.
That's right.
And then all before O'Brien leaves. Like, this guy...
This is Cardassian efficiency.
This guy works fast.
Yeah. He's
and really it is insane that he got all that done before they left. And then, like, what's also insane is how did nobody notice this, like, beforehand? That O'Brien's in two different places at once.
Yeah.
And
then he gets in and does all that.
And how do you beam, like, high-grades weapons without, like, the computer saying, hey, look... You know, my phone tells me when it's about to rain after it's already raining. But I mean, like...
Yeah, that it doesn't totally make sense. Do you think there'd be some fail-safes on that?
That's like, oh, they get a notification. It's like, oh, look, a whole bunch of torpedoes got beamed to a ship under O'Brien in the same...
Well, and not just that, but you would think, okay, so the voice recognition...
Would there be some sort of scanning for the cargo before it left to what's on it? Things like that?
If you think about it, so he uses a voice recognition to get in the weapons locker. Okay, maybe I'll...
Where'd he get the code from?
Maybe I'll buy that, but then he does have to beam it. And how does he beam it into the runabout without sensors picking that up? All that stuff that, you know, there's got to be some kind of manifest.
Why is there a transporter thing happening all of a sudden from the weapons locker?
And you are engineer chief, so wouldn't you be able to pick up on that stuff and being paying attention to, like, if something got strangely beamed onto your ship?
Well, it's like your ship's all of a sudden, like, 3,000 pounds heavier than it was, like, a minute ago.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the ship be like, oh, look, a runabout notification. Are you carrying, you know, why are you carrying so much armaments?
The only thing I could think is that maybe... O'Brien's such a rush, you know, he just, you know, he's kind of frazzled, so sure. He's not thinking straight. But he is, you know,
But he doesn't even have to think straight.
He's a seasoned chief. So, I mean, he's not like, he's seen action.
No, but
he's been to war. This man's been to war.
But shouldn't the station be picking up, like, the anomalies?
Oh, I agree. Like, where's Kira? Where's Dax? Anybody?
Like... Oh, there's an unrecognized transport happening here. I guess sensors don't, you know, pick up transports of any kind, because I don't know how many times the Next Generation locate Commander Worf or locate Captain Picard or locate Riker. They're not aboard the starship.
Shouldn't you have one of those on?
Isn't there like
for warheads?
Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, like that should be like, you know,
17 warheads have gone missing,
especially after Star Trek VI.
Yeah,
it's like, according to the computer, we've got all the weapons. We fired two. Like, what happened? Like, it's just like, shouldn't they have, like, been a lot better about tracking their torpedoes since Star Trek VI time?
You would think
that
so.
That was a big, you know, whoopty-daisy.
Well, that being said, O'Brien and Keiko take off on their trip on the runabout, and there's a little... See, man, it does seem like O'Brien just does not want to be on this trip.
Too much sex.
I don't even know if it's sex. I think he's just like, I just like to play with machines all day long.
Yeah, he loves his work too much. I think he loves his work more than his wife.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And he wants his technical manuals. He's a lot like, he's basically DS9 Scotty. Like,
yeah, Scotty.
He wants his tech manual.
Wasn't that one of the jokes in the TOS?
Yeah.
It's like, Scotty, he says, aren't you on break or something like that? He says, what are you reading? Is it technical manuals or something? Like
yeah,
that?
Exactly.
He goes, why don't you relax? He goes, I am relaxing. Yeah, so he's, you know, Keiko gives him shit for that.
Although he apologizes and starts to kiss her, and then...
I like how he puts on, some Japanese
music. Japanese music. It's like, play anything by this guy.
Yeah.
It's not like, play something, you know, nice and soft by this guy. Just anything.
It could have been, like, Mongolian throat singing. That would be awesome. the most annoying song the guy ever put out. Totally ruined the mood.
The worst song, yeah. And then, like, she's like, why don't the chairs go down? And he's like, oh, no, he said he wants the chairs to go down.
Because, you know, no matter what recording artist you love, like, even your most favorite artist, they have written probably maybe the most annoying song somewhere in their large... Oh, yeah. Like, you know, their backlog of stuff. So, like, if you just say, play anything.
Yeah, it's like, oh, play something by Metallica. It'll pick something from Load, Reload, or Saint Anger. And it's like,
or something so bad. Or just that off song that just, like, is, like, from that album, you know, like, that one song that's sandwiched between the two good songs. Just, it's not good for some reason. And it just was, you know, it made the cut for the album, but it's not a good song.
Mama, she has taught me well. Told me when I was young. Son, your life's an open book. Play some country guitar before it's done.
That would be nice if they played that with him and Keiko.
Mama said.
Well, so as O'Brien's ready to get his groove on.
The computer does send an alert when ships get close, but not when, you know, your ship's got like a whole bunch of warheads on it.
Right. So the Cardassian ship, Border Patrol ship, comes upon them, asks them to drop their shields in... Basically say, you know, hey, we're going to, you know...
We're going to board you. Have fun.
Yeah, so... they
don't do it gently. No lube.
No. And they come on, and they basically take O'Brien under arrest.
They shoot him in front of Keiko.
Keiko. Keiko is screaming, and...
Honestly, I think this is about the only episode where I don't, like, just hate Keiko. She is totally justified in everything she does this episode.
She's pretty good. She's pretty nice, actually. You're very... You like her as that supporting role. Keiko never bothered me in Next Gen so much.
Oh, but yeah, but she was fine in Next Gen.
But she does seem to get more and more aggravating in Deep Space Nine.
And, like, even, like, the writers knew, so they just sent her away to Bajor.
What is up with that?
I just don't understand. It's like...
Is it her, or is it how they wrote her?
I guess how they wrote her, but it's like, I guess...
Because, like, this episode, you like Keiko.
Yeah, like Keiko doesn't bother, but this is also early. I mean, this is still just season two.
Season two, yeah.
Second to last episode, but still season two. But, like, I think after this is when she gets super annoying.
Yeah. Like, they don't know what to do with her.
Yeah, because they had her teach in school, and they had the terrorists at the end of season one.
They blew it up.
Blew up the school. And then, like, they just send her away to,
Yeah.
I didn't mind her being a teacher, because, I mean, like, she's got the personality where I can see her being a teacher. Like, that made sense.
And I like the idea that, like, so O'Brien transferred to Deep Space Nine, and she's kind of like a fish out of water. She doesn't know what to do with herself. So she was, like, looking for something to aim her energies at.
But then they wrote her, like, really bitchy for, like, the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I guess they got tired of writing her because she was so horrible. And then they just sent her away. Like, she's gone. And then, like...
Yeah, no, she just totally disappears.
She's just, like, gone for most of it. And then, you know...
Her and Molly. Yeah, I mean, they pop up here and there once in a while, but...
And every time they go on vacation, something bad happens. The next time they go on vacation, Molly falls to a time portal, and they get old Molly, where she's like a cave woman.
Yeah, did you see the Indiegogo for the...
Yeah, we should have mentioned that in our news. They were doing a documentary for Deep Space Nine. Now that we've derailed the show, we're going back to news. thanks! No, I should have mentioned this earlier. But they launched the Indiegogo for a documentary with interviews and stuff from almost all the cast, the creators, and they're even going to do like a behind the scenes vignette where the original writers get together in a writer's room and they just like pitch like what the 8th season of Deep Space Nine would be.
That's cool.
And it got funded within 24 hours. That's awesome. Totally funded, and now there's stretch goals to get it up to like a 90-minute feature instead of 60, which I thought was really weird that it was only going to be 60 to begin with. But so I hope it makes the 90-minute point.
Well, I thought it was interesting because, you know, they had Molly.
Yeah, all grown up. Wow.
She's...
very nice looking.
She filled in all the spots.
Yes, all the right spots. I think her name is, or Hey Tay.
I have no idea.
Yes, she should be in more stuff.
But it's funny in that little video. They're like, "Who are you?
Who are you? I'm Molly O'Brien. I was 5 years old. I would love to see if we can get her on the show. Like, does she remember anything from doing that?
I don't know. 5 years old. Is that pretty young?
That's like around the that's like the that's the cusp age where you start where you kind of remember things.
I'm sure she remembers
really vaguely.
I'm sure she remembers being on the set, probably some impressions of certain actors and certain directors and stuff like that. But that's probably about it.
Yeah,
because I mean, she didn't even have that many lines.
I wonder if she's like permanently scared of Rumpelstiltskin.
Well,
because she was five on the show, but the show ran for 7 years, and she popped up a couple times. So,
Yeah, I mean, she got older.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe by season six or seven, like, she starts remembering stuff better. But I remember she's scared of Rumpelstiltskin season one.
Rumpelstiltskin. Okay.
Forever she's scarred because of that episode.
Oh, by the way, on the runabout, Molly is on with the some neighbors, the park, Petersons, that's right. Who are the Petersons? We don't know.
We don't know. They probably live next to Garrick. That's why Molly likes visiting, because Garrick always comes over and makes her neat little clothes. Or maybe the Petersons is Garrick. Maybe
or teaches him interrogation.
Tactics.
Tactics, yeah.
Oh,
how to get answers out of Miles.
Or Rumpelstiltskin if he shows up again.
Garrick is Rumpelstiltskin.
No.
No.
Garrick is Garrick. Rumpelstiltskin were stupid alien.
So after they take them under O'Brien under arrest,
Keiko gets sent back to the station and cries to Sisko.
He took my husband and stunned him, and then he grabbed my.
Which
wrist.
Is a totally rational opinion, thing to do in this situation.
Well, and then we see O'Brien being processed.
This is great.
They rip his clothes off.
They strip him naked. He's a sexy man.
No, he's really not.
No, he's not. Like I said last episode, I think he's like the ugliest Klingon there ever was.
You know what's funny about...
I love Colmeany.
Colmeany is... He is a good actor.
He's a fantastic actor.
But you really look at him, there's nothing... There's not one part of him that's like an attractive human being. Like, there's nothing that you go like...
He's got itty-bitty eyes.
He's got that really curly hair, and it's like, it's never like trimmed right. It's always just like, I was even looking at pictures of him through this episode, and it's like the hair on the side of his head, he's not even trimmed on the side. It's all like just wild, like coming off on the side and stuff like that. And it's just, he's got that just, his face has a strange shape to it. And when we've seen him basically almost completely naked.
I love how the clothes just cover up just the right parts.
And he does not have like a great physique. It's okay.
He's a real man. I like that.
No, I'm not gonna
like for Hollywood for something for out Hollywood. Of Hollywood to do that, like having a real man.
But here's my point.
That's awesome.
Here's my point with him.
Props.
He
no body shaming for O'Brien.
No, I'm not body shaming anything. But he has been in a ton of things. Not just Star Trek, he's done.
He's in Hell on Wheels.
Hell on Wheels. He's in a ton of stuff, and you're like, what? Like, for a guy who is not super attractive and doesn't have like a great physique or anything like that. I mean, obviously he's a superb actor.
He's an amazing actor. I love him.
Yeah, but it's like it's weird to think that somebody like that could get constant roles like that and just keep on acting.
Well, it's just his acting chops makes up for any shortcomings that
by no means
that Hollywood may perceive.
Am I diminishing him? But it's pretty amazing that somebody like that could keep on getting parts.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he's great though, and I think that's what shows through. I mean, like, because he had nothing to do in Next Gen but Transporter, and they made that awesome comic about it, and then
he
was the first episode of the first season, but then you don't see him for a while.
Yeah, he disappears for a while, so he must have had some connection with somebody in there, like the.
But
casting.
I mean, like, but he was there for most of Next Gen, just sitting there in the transporter room, just doing his job, and like. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he had to do lots of other acting gigs to like.
He probably just got like a small check.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he had to do a bunch of other things to make up for like doing that little bit. But I think, that perseverance paid off. He kept coming back for that little role, standing there at the transporter pad. And then they gave him a huge role in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
maybe
awesome.
He was supposed to have a bigger role. Maybe maybe the casting were thinking maybe to grow his role, and it just never came because the stories never got to that point.
But then, you know, he had a couple episodes devoted to him in Next Gen, like one
yeah,
or two.
Yeah, he did. It was really
like,
wild.
He had like one or two episodes devoted to him. It's like, hey, let's do an episode about that guy that stands there all the time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then he gets, you know, a major role on you know, his name's in the opening credits. I mean, it's
oh,
great.
No,
I mean, like, I mean, I love...
You couldn't ask for anything better as an actor or anybody who's a creative person.
I mean, basically, working on a show for 14 years, I mean, he probably has more FaceTime credits than Worf.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well... In that ballpark.
Probably. I mean...
Him and Michael Dorn probably have...
They're probably neck and neck.
Yeah. I bet you.
I mean, Michael Dorn's on every single episode of Next Gen, where O'Brien wasn't, but O'Brien was also in the first three seasons of DS9, where
right.
Worf wasn't. So, I mean, right. they're probably neck and neck for credits.
Probably pretty close.
Number of episodes.
Yeah. It would be interesting to actually see...
I didn't look it up, so I don't
know. No, we're shooting from the hip
here. We're spitballing.
But it would be interesting if somebody make a chart, like, who, like... appeared in the most episodes and movies, who has the most screen time, like
for minutes on screen,
like everybody.
Well, Michael Dorn's by far got more minutes on screen without a doubt.
But. Yeah. But like who got the most and like who, what actor would have the most?
I think it'd be a tie between between Colin Meaney and Michael Dorn.
And maybe, what's her name? Roxana Troy,
Rena Sirtis. But she only showed up a couple times on Voyager.
No. Troy's mom.
Luxana Troy?
Yeah.
Next to nil. She's got like five TNG episodes, like two or three DS9 episodes.
All the original series.
Oh, voice credits. Oh.
Voice. If you always Chapel.
If you're getting voice credits, she'd probably be up there with Michael Dorn because her voice has appeared in everything, even in the 2009 movie. And I don't remember, but I heard someone say that her voice was in that.
I'm just saying she's an... I guess, actually, maybe Nimoy might beat everyone out, but I don't know. Hey, who knows? Whatever. We've gone way off track. Anyways,
way off track.
So,
last episode, we had no track, so we got used to it.
I know. I get back. Ratchet it down a little bit. Sorry, people. Yeah, so we're back on. So he got processed. It pulled his molar out, and then they threw him into prison.
He wants to know what's going on. They won't tell him.
They won't tell him what he's been charged with. And... He does meet with his counselor,
which I love. This guy, he's probably like my favorite character of the episode. He's hilarious.
He is hilarious, and he has a slightly different look than most Cardassians. Do you notice that? Like his coloring is a little off.
Too. Yeah, his color's different, and like his clothes are very different. I guess civilian wear, because all the other Cardassians are wearing, I guess, the military, considered military attire.
Yeah, no, he's interesting, and he basically...
His neck ridges look a little bit different.
His back ridges.
Neck ridges.
So he's basically there to be his... You would think his defense, but the defense is...
He's basically his lawyer, but there is no winning trials, because as he says, winning isn't everything.
Weddings isn't everything. Yeah, and the interesting thing about Cardassia is that the state is everything.
You are guilty until proven guilty.
Yeah, there's no due process in that. It's if the state decides that you are guilty, you have only one job is to...
Your execution is actually scheduled before your trial schedule.
Yeah, your only job is to acquiesce to the charges... Ask for forgiveness and mercy, and then just go through with the the result of what the courts have decided or the state has decided for that matter.
Which is
it's a show trial. It's a kangaroo court, and doesn't mean anything.
It's Judge Judy on steroids. The cases are real. The actors are real.
It's worse than Judge Judy.
Way worse than Judge Judy. It's Judge Judy if every outcome was death.
That would be awesome.
This guy ran over my dog. I need retribution. He dies. It's like, this guy owes me money. He dies.
They're all die.
This guy ran over my truck. I need to sue him for this much money. He dies.
You all die.
It's pretty much how Cardassian Court is. And it's filmed on live TV, just like Judge Judy.
It is, and it's all pretty...
reality television.
It's pretty...
I think all the reality TV people, like, hey, they watch Deep Space Nine, like, hey, we could do this. We could just film everything and put it on TV and people will watch it.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying altogether because it's the idea that you could be charged, not even know what you're charged with. Like, even... you know, as we've discussed on our shows before, that our justice system, as flawed as it is, you do know
it's
what you're charged.
It's still light years away from Cardassian, quote unquote, justice.
You still know what you're charged with. Like, when you get, yeah. like, you're charged, like, you're like, oh, you're getting charged for, you know, possessions of narcotics, you know, murder, manslaughter, anything. You know what you're charged with.
Grand Theft Auto,
right. But you don't even know. He doesn't even know. Like, so he's basically been abducted, processed, stripped naked, molars pulled out, thrown in naked into a jail cell.
Given an S&M outfit to wear.
Yeah. What a terrible outfit. Oh, my God. Like, what's the point
of that?
It's
all spiky and black and leathery, probably. Pleather because it was a TV show.
And he even gets introduced with the Chief Archon. It's Makbar, and she is basically the judge. And she's basically, she still won't tell him.
Like I said, Judge Judy.
Yeah, she's the Judge Judy of Cardassia. And she won't tell him what he's charged with. And basically, like, you know, your job is to...
And she won't tell the wife and Sisko because she gets on a call with them after Keiko comes in and tells what's going on. And he's like, it's like, I'll let you know as soon as I know anything. And then they get a call from Cardassia.
Right.
Odo volunteers to become his Nestor.
Yeah, so it's sort of like his legal counsel, you know. And yeah. We find that Odo knows nothing about the Cardassian system.
Even though he's been in trials before, apparently, because that's what he, you know, he was there to testify in trials. That's how he's got his credentials.
So Odo and Keiko go to Cardassia Prime, and, you know, Odo meets with them. Odo still has no idea what he's been charged with, but they did find, obviously, the warheads have been... missing,
confiscated
and
by the Cardassian government.
We don't know what, you know, we don't know how that all happened.
And yeah, we kind of told you what happened at the beginning, but yeah. As of the story of the show, they don't know what's happened yet. They just know it was his voice print, and Odo was questioning him about all the things that have happened fishy on the station.
Right, and basically, you know, O'Brien says, I've been in, you know, the Federation my whole life.
Nobody's ever questioned my loyalty.
Yeah. So he's kind of shocked by that. And he kind of even brings up his daughter, Molly. He's like, you know, I want, you know, her to see, you know, a father that, you know, is
a good person.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of good that they got Odo to do that, because Odo is kind of like the outside person who would kind of push those buttons where I don't think Sisko really would have.
This whole episode falls apart without Odo. You don't, if Odo wasn't in this, I don't think anything would happen, because he questions the court where he's not supposed to. He throws in new evidence when he's not supposed to.
Well, like, I mean, I don't even understand, like, how, like, people don't get away with horrible crimes on Cardassia. They say their system's so perfect and great, but I'm just like, all you got to do is voice modulate someone's voice and then do what you need to do, and then you can just, like, you know, frame anybody for any kind of crime.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just like, and then they won't even admit new evidence or use any kind of computer software to figure stuff out. I mean, that must be a terrible place to live, where they won't even look at new evidence.
Oh, and I want to get into what I think Cardassia is like, but so with that being said, so obviously the trial goes underway. Meanwhile, in Deep Space Nine, obviously they're investigating. They do find out that he met with that Raymond Boone from the Rutledge. They bring
question him,
and he's kind of like, I don't know. They're like, what do I know about this?
They
guy?
Start to think that he's part of the Maquis because of where he lives. He lives on the Cardassian side of the demilitarized zone. So they think, hey, he's probably
yeah, right. And
Bashir gets a weird night visitor.
Yeah, don't turn around.
Don't turn around.
He's not part of the Maquis.
Take your pants off.
I will do it quick. Not as quick as O'Brien, but quick.
But that being said, he basically says he's not part of the Maquis. So it gives him that, which is an interesting thing that the Maquis is given this a shadowy side.
I wonder who that is.
I don't even know.
Is it the bald guy?
I don't even know if it matters, because it's like, it's more of just like, it's strange that the Maquis is painted that way in the beginning.
That they're like spies. Like, oh.
Yeah, like, they're all these like infiltrating, like, you know, shadow side Maquis. But you don't really see that as
no,
much.
No, you don't see anything like that. They're like...
And it would be way cooler if the Maquis had more of that going on throughout the whole Deep Space Nine
thing. That would have been cool.
But it kind of just goes away.
Yeah, well, you know, then they had the bald guy that Sisko gets in the tussles with, and we did the episode, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Panel or whatever, butt panel or whatever we did.
Whatever it was.
Way back when. Yeah. I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, Mitchell or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like he's basically Sisko's nemesis who's part of the Maquis. Like, I love that tension between them, but it's not like that sneaking around at night and like, oh, don't turn around. We've got eyes everywhere. Like, that was cool, like, where they're, like,
yeah,
totally insidious.
Because, like, why would the Maquis come out and say anything to, you know, the authorities? Why would they care? Why would they even know? That's the other side of it.
But I think this almost paints the Maquis in almost more sympathetic light, because this way it shows they still kind of care about the Federation. What happens in the Federation.
Right.
But what when you see all the people in Voyager who are Maquis, they're like, I don't give a crap. You're a Federation. You signed the, like, where it kind of, where it's like they kind of don't care. It's like they're kind of fighting both sides.
Yeah, but those are the Hicks of the Maquis. They're like, you know, like,
I guess Chakotay.
You know, like, you guys broke that deal and you screwed us all over. But, you know, my thing is that, like, this paints the Maquis as, like, super, like, you know,
sleeper agents, sort of.
Yeah, like, there's all these people, and they're infiltrated, they're in Deep Space
Nine. And they're part of the Federation. And
they know all the, they know what's going on, that the warheads were missing and stuff like that. Like, how do they even know that? Like what memo was sent out? Like,
I don't know, but it's cool. It's like they had, like, way, all this inside knowledge.
It'd be cool if that was, like...
It's like they were another Section 31, almost. And then they'd stop playing in that way completely, right, after this.
That, if they would have done that, they would have been so cool if they kept up on that.
Oh, yeah. Maquis would have been way cooler instead of, like, this weird throwaway losers, like they kind of are.
You bunch of losers. So he basically tells, Bashir that this guy Boone has nothing to do with Maquis, and to, you know, look, he's probably somebody else, you know, agent of the Cardassian state.
And so they kind of do some more questioning and like, hey, how come you stopped talking to your wife? How come you stopped talking to your parents?
Yeah,
eight years ago, everything happened.
And when they bring him into the medical bay, he does a couple of tests on him, and sure enough,
he's missing his first molar.
What could that mean? Meanwhile, back on Cardassia Prime, obviously, O'Brien's being questioned. Not even questioned. He's being tried, and he's not given... That he was working for the Maquis, and...
Yeah, they say he was delivering torpedoes to the Maquis, and that's why they're reframing him. Or...
Yeah, processing him.
Processing him through the court system. And executing him, because he's an enemy of the state. And I mean, theoretically, if he was part of the Maquis, I mean, they have every right to execute him if he was part of the Maquis, because, I mean, that's a terrorist organization, I think.
Right. But meanwhile, he should be able to ask for some kind of a real trial, because this is just a show trial.
Sure.
And on top of that... they mention even that they've, you know, brought, like, the Enterprise to the demilitarized.
Yeah, I totally missed that on my first watch through. I read the Memory Alpha and I was like, oh. And then I rewatched the episode and I was like, oh, that's really cool they mentioned that, because this is the first episode of Deep Space Nine that played after the series finale.
Okay.
Of TNG.
Okay. So yeah, so I mean, obviously they're getting kind of like they're saber rattling with the Cardassians, and you know it's the thing that, you know, you'd think that Cardassia would have played this off a little differently.
I really wish they would have, like, had, like, made this a two-part episode and had to, like, flash over to the next-gen people.
That would be cool.
That would have been awesome, because, like, you know, it's like, oh, Brian, he served with us. Like, you know, it's right. Important that we
or
get
even
him back.
Have, like, Riker show up or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic. And Riker's been in DS9 before. Or
yeah.
Maybe not before this point, but at
Tom
some
Riker.
Point, Tom Riker shows up.
But
it's later, season 3, because they have the Defiant.
Sure. But that's, the next thing is that they basically go through and they're giving the states kind of like putting their case against O'Brien. O'Brien, they want him to testify. O'Brien says he won't testify, but it's like it's not a choice.
You have to get up, and then they start...
And it's a funny thing is because you don't really think about it, but like in our court systems, like you are not legally bound to testify for yourself. Like, there's no reason for you to testify. any court case. They're like
it's usually better that you don't testify in our court system.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like just think about
it. You can't speak for yourself. It's like don't speak for yourself because make you look bad.
If you're like framed for a murder or something like that, and let's say they want to question you, it's like it's better if they don't question you. You know, it's like...
Well, I guess they know that in Cardassia, so they want to question you so you can trip up on your words. Like, it's the total opposite of our system.
I almost wish that we had, like a legal expert right now to talk to us and, like,
that
walk us through.
Great. Yeah, okay. we didn't think that far ahead.
I actually did think it, because I do know a couple lawyers, but I don't think they'd want to talk about Star Trek.
Make them watch an episode.
Watch this and get back to me.
Oh, that would have been fun. Actually, if any lawyers listen to the show...
Yeah.
Email us at stuffaholics@yahoo.com. Give us your take. We will read it on the air.
Yeah, and we'll promote your legal team.
Hurting the call? Call this guy.
But so he has to testify himself, and he basically said, you know, they're asking like, you know, were you abused as a child? You know, it's like, no, I love my parents.
Well, it's like the classic like, you know, serial killer type thing. They're kind of going through like, oh, what did you like hurt? You know, were you angry all the time? It's like,
and they bring up spousal abuse, and I was kind of like, that's questionable.
It's coming up. It hasn't really happened yet.
It's questionable.
No, I think Keiko's been more or less okay up until this point.
Yeah, no, she's pretty cool.
I think it's after season two where she starts to fall off the rails.
Yeah. And then after that, you know, they're basically, you know, and through this whole trial, obviously Odo keeps on throwing flags onto the field, but...
they're like, oh, can I speak to him privately? Well, that's not going to entertain the people if you speak to the council privately.
Right.
And so they're so, like, bent on this reality television type thing where it's like... Just seeing people like get tried for murder is just like the thing,
right?
And so they can be executed. It's just like, whoa! It's just,
yeah.
I mean, you think that's like, why would people watch that? But people watch all sorts of dumb reality television right now.
Oh yeah,
like, as we record this, this is like, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night. So
there's,
I mean, people are watching. This is prime time for reality.
People are watching
junk on television.
You know, the Housewives of whatever,
and Kim Kardashian doing this or that, or
yeah.
It's crazy.
But at the last minute, Sisko walks in with Boone.
and the Judge Judy of Cardassia, she's like, well, we've had this great trial, and he's, you know, so guilty, but we're going to show him mercy today because...
And we're going to give him up to Sisko, commander of Deep Space.
We'll let him, you know, deal out their punishment or whatever. Because she's like, and she's thinking, oh, crap, he can expose all of our... corruptness.
But the thing is, the weird thing about that, well, I'll get into that later, but it did seem a little bit like, well, could he, and would they let that information out to their Cardassian people?
Oh, it's live. I mean, if he said, I mean, he could have said anything.
But they could cut the feed.
Yeah, they could, but I mean, the damage could be done just with a sentence.
Yeah. I don't know.
And if they cut the feed, then you know there's something they're hiding.
They could just say, hey, we're going to take a quick recess.
Uh-huh.
And then, obviously, they release O'Brien. O'Brien and Keiko are given, you know, double vacation, so now he's even in worse suffering than he was before.
Double vacation, and he has no technical manuals, holo camera, or clothes. And Keiko's like, good.
Very nice.
We don't need any clothes where we're going. Riza.
And the episode ends. Dave... what are your ideas on this episode after seeing this?
You know, after we did the episode with the districts, sanctuary districts.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And the upcoming Trumpocalypse.
Trumpocalypse. Yeah. Right.
Granted, like on that episode, I said, you know, I think we're going to sanctuary districts. Doesn't matter who is getting elected, but.
Sorry, my phone just kind of like went off.
Started talking.
It actually started talking about apocalypse because it just started recording you. I don't know why.
It's like, what is apocalypse? It started defining.
It did.
Thank you, Google Voice.
Yeah.
Thank you for looking up apocalypse for me because I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
I just, Trump is so fascinated with reality TV.
Yes.
And, yeah. You know, and the idea of fake news and everything like that. Like, I could just, like... Not that our system could get this corrupt, but I mean, like, I could kind of see this is where he'd probably want things to go with trials, be, you know, put on TV, the juries being totally, like, thrown out. You're guilty. Your punishment's death.
You're fired.
And we want your wife to be on TV crying to make it like all the more dramatic.
Even more, right, right, right. In service of the state.
And it's just like, you know, it's just scary. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, I love that. I love the Star Trek. It points out things and like, you know, because they don't pull things out of thin air. They kind of pull things like, hey, things could get worse or things could be like this.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have to be. And just like just thinking about if that could even actually be a thing, like here, that would just be frightening.
Well, it's interesting that you say all that because my view is after seeing this, my two thoughts. Obviously, they bring up the George Orwell 1984 novel, which they do go into a trial, but there's a lot more information going on in that. But I was thinking about Kafka's novel, The Trial, where. You know, basically, the guy's the same idea as O'Brien. He's just he's tried for something he doesn't even know what he's charged with.
Yeah,
and it basically the whole idea of this was that you know here's a guy who's tried and this was written in like 1920s or something like that. The Trial.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And you know he's talking you know in this and you see the same things happening later on in Nazi Germany. In, you know, Soviet Russia, and, you know, with Stalin and Mussolini. And we even see it now even more, you know, we saw the things with Iraq, the same things that happened with, you know, Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
North Korea. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah. Something happened there.
I mean, if you have a Cardassia.
It's North Korea.
Yeah. It's North Korea. Right
or the trial of a non-Syed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even China and as long as now China's not as
China's getting a lot better.
It's gotten better, but it's still the same idea. It's basically the state controls everything. You don't.
But they're also becoming more free market.
Free market,
even though they're still quote unquote communists.
You talk about talk against the government, you might just disappear for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's the scary thing about it. It's like, you know, here's a totalitarian state like Cardassia, and we see that today. So that's my thought. Automatically goes to everything is for the state. So, you know, like if, you know, you're charged against something, you're taking the fall for the state for whatever crime.
That they pinned on you.
On you because you seem like the most easy target.
For whatever reason. And that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about how our systems that's kind of messed up. Like, you know, the podcast called Serial, the first season, the non-Syed case. It's like they just went with him because...
It was an easy target.
He was an easy target. And
well, not to mention Anand Syed. Seemed like he did fit some of the things, you know, like...
He was also brown, so, well, like...
Yeah, and no,
racism kind of fits into it a little bit,
that
too.
That might be the case, too, but there were certain things that kind of put him in the right place at the right time. If... I'm not, you know, I'm not saying he was guilty.
Sure, but I mean, like, I mean, he could be guilty of sin, but the way the court system decided he was guilty...
Sure.
There was zero evidence... to his guilt.
Sure.
It was all he said, she said. He had a relatively incompetent lawyer,
mm-hmm.
And that was ailing, getting sick, and taking too much work on. So everything that happened in that trial was insane, and they were just being lazy as they possibly, the police were being lazy. They didn't really even try to look for anybody else. I mean, they interviewed a couple people, and that was about it.
Well, that's just, the thing is that we've talked before. I think we've talked about this actually more than once on our past episodes. Is that, you know, it does seem like sometimes when like law enforcement like targets a certain person in their investigation.
I mean, it's almost just as bad as what they do in Cardassia. It's like, you know, Cardassia is just framing you to frame you, and then our police just don't try to look for anybody else because
they're just like, yes, this is it.
It's got to be it.
Yeah. Right.
Even though he wasn't the current boyfriend at the time, and all this stuff.
Yeah, right, right.
That a lot of weird stuff was going on with the actual boyfriend at the time, his mom being the manager of the stores, and it's easy to listen to Serial. It's bonkers.
But yeah, so interesting that I am slight in a dark, imagination, I guess, more than anything. Like, I'm fascinated with totalitarian states like Russia, you know, Soviet Russia, and North Korea.
And Soviet Russia, state screws you.
Well, yeah, because it's so surreal. Like, how does the mass population just go for it and go like, well, we better just be quiet because if we say anything, you know, we'll be taken away. You know, we'll be sent to the gulags or whatever like that. He's like, you wonder, like what is the like what point do people go like, well, I'm just going to shut the hell up and just whatever the state says.
I mean, I think Russian people are just crazy. I mean, like, if you look at, you know, the couple wars where they try to get invaded, like, they, I mean, crazy and smart in one way. It's like, if when the Germany tried to invade, they just back up, they burn all their cities. They burn their cities to the ground, they burn their crops and everything, and just, like, they'd ruin their own country just to prevent the other people from staying. It was like...
I don't think the actual average citizen goes for that. I think what it is and I'm going to say something that maybe might piss some people off. I'm sorry if you're from a Russian heritage. But I've noticed more than once that people who are from Russia and like Eastern Europe, and I do wonder if this is something that's deep in their psychology over the last, you know, 100 years of Russia and, you know, all, you know, World War II and everything, if they've got this kind of paranoia deep set in them. Because I've noticed I've had a couple friends that are like, you know, in that, you know, grew up or they're, you know, they're or came to America, and they just have a paranoia to them. And maybe it's just the people I've met. I could be completely wrong about this, but I do wonder if that's impacted them in some way, in a deep way, like through their grandfathers and their grandmothers and, you know, who's taught them over the years that, hey, you know, don't trust people because, you know, you don't know what will happen.
And because they're American. I mean, like, the show The Americans, I really, really enjoy that show. It's about the Russian spies who have, like, just deep, deep, deep cover where they're just, like, regular people and they just do their spy stuff on the side, like, whenever they can. And, you know, it could involve murdering people. It could involve, like, you know, signaling for nuclear war. And,
yeah, like, but those are, like, but I'm talking, I mean, those are obviously Soviet agents, you know. Kind of idea.
Yeah, but I'm sure it not only is the hatred ingrained in their agents, I'm sure it's ingrained in...
I don't know. I don't really...
It may not be, but I mean...
I don't pick up on a hatred. I pick a more of a paranoia where they get like, they don't trust people because I think the state screwed them over for so long. You especially talk about people who, you know, from Eastern Europe, Ukraine.
Well, I mean, communism just... It looks cool on paper, but then it just works out poorly. Well,
the problem is with communism, too, is that, you know, you had, like, a complete monster like Joseph Stalin under control for so long.
He killed more of his own people than Hitler killed of Jews.
And even look at what he did with World War II, how he treated the soldiers. And basically, if you turn back, you got killed. Like, you charge over that hill, and if you turn back, we're going to shoot you. They'll kill their own men.
Yeah, he killed millions of his own people.
I mean, and that's just talking the warfare side of it. We're not even talking about people who'd been just carted off in the middle of the night because they said something bad about, you know, Stalin or, you know, Soviet Russia or anything. So that's, I guess my point is that I think that's a deep set problem that that those people had to live with. And like you're saying, like, you know, you go back to Napoleon, you know, invading Russia
and
to the
Hitler,
Nazis.
Yeah, both times Russia. The same thing happened.
They basically backed up and they burned their villages. Now, mind you, the Nazis were terrible as well. They did terrible things to the people as they invaded anybody they caught in those villages and townships. They were literally disgusting.
Sure. I mean, I'm not you know, giving props to the Nazis. I'm just saying, like, just the way they...
No, I know you're Russians, not giving props to Nazis.
The way the Russians do scorched earth tactics...
Russians were just as bad.
Is crazy and it's sort of smart. You're keeping your army... You're going to make the army go away, but you're just screwing everybody over.
But I mean, like, if they said, like, hey, Dave, you know, the Nazis are coming. We're going to burn, you know, your house down and your family's house down.
All your crops.
Everything you own. Everything's going to be destroyed.
Thanks!
Thanks. But
it's
hey,
for the good of Russia. They won't be taken over. Yay.
But the state really took advantage. And that's the thing is everything's for the state. And that's the same thing we see for Cardassia here. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Is the idea is everything's for the state. You take the fall for the state. And it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre that humankind could go to that level. And, obviously it does.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it in North Korea. You know, we saw it in Iran with Saddam Hussein, same idea. I mean, just it's unbelievable that people can be, like, go under this, like, I don't even know. I mean, like, I guess Saddam Hussein could be kind of that cult of personality where people just could kind of, like, you know, that whatever he says and does, he's almost like a living god.
Well, I mean, that's how Kim Jong-un, the president of North Korea, is. They're viewed as like sort of deities.
Yeah.
By their people. Like what they say goes. It's just like, didn't we grow out of this with Egypt and the pharaohs? Come on, people, please.
It's just weird that that's still a thing. Still a thing. But I guess we still see it in our own way. I mean, we venerate people, our leaders, to this level. They don't really deserve. Because if you think about it, you know, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, they're just people like us. They just had more opportunities or different ways of that they've, you know, maybe they're more ambitious in some ways. So it's like, nobody's any different, you know.
Yeah, we're just people living our lives.
And we got the same DNA, you know, it's just a little mixed up here and there, a couple letters jumbled up, but we're still the same thing. We're just, you know, it's just bizarre that people get venerated to a point that
it's just, yeah, it's bizarre. Like, and that's one of the great things about Star Trek is that, especially the Federation Star Trek, where it's just this peace and like working together. There's no point to fight. Like that's one of the great things about Star Trek is usually fighting is like last resort.
Right.
It's like we need to talk and work things out and work together. That way things can become accomplished.
Well, and that's a great thing is that also the Federation is a democracy or some form of democracy. We don't know exactly what kind of how it runs, but I mean it's the same idea.
It's different presidents. I mean it's not like it's a dictator type.
Right, right. We get different presidents and all that kind of thing, but it's
Red
like
Foreman.
Red
Foreman.
Yes. Red Foreman.
I will put my foot up your ass.
Right.
Vote for me. It's like, I like this guy. He sounds good.
He's got to put his foot up my ass.
Man, I like that foot. Hope it's a small foot.
Yeah, so anyways, it's I don't know. It's just the whole thing's interesting how that all, you know, plays out. I never It fascinates me and also terrifies me at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's what I'm trying to articulate.
It's definitely possibly terrifying.
Yeah, but it's fascinating that it could get to that level. Like, wow, how did it get to that level? You know,
it can. And like I said, I'm scared Trump and this reality TV obsession
will
push that kind of totalitarian trial stuff on us.
Well, look at Nazi Germany. I mean, within less than 10 years, you had that. It's crazy.
Good thing max presidential terms are only 8 years.
Yeah, but that could be rescinded.
Oh, good God. Executive order, presidents for life.
For life. It could happen.
God, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, that's sleep tight.
But yeah, I mean, overall, this is a great episode. I love the O'Brien must suffer episode. I think almost all of them are pretty solid.
Yeah, and he's got this running beef, which we don't really know in Next Gen. About his Cardassian experience.
You get a little bit. Like, he's got the captain from the Rutledge, I think, and they have...
Oh, right, yeah.
They have a sing-along because the captain is starting to go crazy, or maybe he's part of the Maquis, too, or something. I don't know, but, like, yeah. They have a sing-along.
We should go back to that one.
Yeah.
I have to look that one up. I haven't looked that one up in a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's... The O'Brien thing, the suffering of O'Brien is... I don't know. It's interesting that became a running theme.
They wanted to pick on it, but like every time they did it, I think it was pure genius. Like they were great.
Yeah, and this is a great episode too because you're seeing, you know, like
first time you see Cardassia,
but also you see this like just absolutely Kafka-esque world of, you know, 1984.
And the interesting thing is that courtroom set is a redress of the Hollow Suites. And I didn't know that, you know.
Because that's where we want to go.
I watched it, and then I read the Memory Alpha, like I said earlier, and then I watched it, and I was looking at it. It didn't look like it. It looked like it was its own set. I couldn't tell that it was a redress of, because I was sitting there looking for it. I'm like, I can't tell. Like, this looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the court. It's just so dark. This is for television, but it's so dark.
It is very dark. Yeah. That'd be a weird show to watch. But yeah, a cool episode. I enjoyed it. I don't know. It just like
they just turn the brightness up on their TVs really, really high so they can see it.
The neon is really bright.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting episode. A lot of interesting characters and ideas thrown out there. It's not everything you'd think for a Star Trek episode, but it takes a weird turn where you like investigate an idea that I don't think we normally talk about.
No, not really.
You know,
but that's the whole thing with Deep Space Nine. It goes where
he goes in
no other Star Trek series really goes.
It goes in some dark corners,
which is why I think Deep Space Nine is my favorite because it does step out of the regular Star Trek sandbox. It's like There's like the Star Trek Enterprise, the Star Trek Deep Space, the Star Trek original series, TNG, and Voyager are pretty much in this big sandbox. And Deep Space Nine's its adjacent, smaller but very cool sandbox.
Right.
And I think that's why I like it, because it does step out of the main sandbox a little bit and goes into darker places and raises great things. And I think, unlike Voyager, I think this Deep Space Nine makes you think a lot more than Voyager did.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, a couple of things in Voyager brings up some thoughts.
Sure. But, I mean, I think Voyager was, like, pitched to be, like, an action show, whereas Deep Space Nine was still a lot of thinking, but it was darker thinking than, like, TOS or TNG, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, they definitely go into the shadows in Deep Space Nine, for sure.
Anything else about the Tribunal?
No, it's, you know, I identify with the suffering of O'Brien.
Your sort of namesake, just a different letter in the last name.
That's right. Me and O'Brien share the same heritage and suffering. The you know, I always joke.
Funny thing is that the Duncan motto is learn to suffer. He should have been a Duncan.
Is it really? Is it the motto for
it? I think it's the motto.
You know, it's learn to suffer?
I think that's the Duncan clan motto, learn to suffer.
Damn.
We were dark people.
I guess so.
And I think Duncan means tan warrior. So like we're
you're Scottish, right?
Yes.
So O'Brien's obviously Irish, and then I have another side. I mean, I have some other Irish, but also my mother's side is MacDonald.
Oh, that's
which
awesome.
Which is Scottish. So, but yeah, I always joke everyone, especially on St. Patrick's Day. It's like everyone always celebrates the Irish for the drinking and their revelries. But nobody ever wants to recognize the Irish melancholy. And I think that's something nobody ever really thinks about. But there is an Irish melancholy that nobody quite gets until you're Irish.
Without a doubt. I mean, my last name's Scottish, but I mean, I'm mixed with everything. I'm sure I've got Irish in me. Cherokee and French, English, whatever. But because we're American and
you're all mixed up.
We're like everything from pretty much Europe.
No, I got Polish, I've got Jewish, I got a whole bunch of other stuff in me too as well.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
Lineage is the next episode.
No, it's not.
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find the show on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. Me at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
Guys at GS Davis Art or at USS Tamerlan. If you want to give us some reviews, where can we find those?
You can go to iTunes and you can give us stars, many stars. You can throw a review our way. You can tell us how much you like the show. All 5 stars.
Yes. You can tell us why for every star you give us.
Yes. 1 for David. 2 for Aaron. 3 for Guy. 4 for, I don't know. And
for dick jokes. And
for dick jokes. And 5 for Star Trek. You know, not just that, if you can, let people know about the show as well. Tell your friends. Tell anybody you might know, any social groups you might associate.
Hit that share button on Facebook. Hit that retweet button on Twitter.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. Just a shitter. Shit.
Just go in that shitter.
Go in the shitter. Tell people in the bathroom stalls of Burger King.
When you hear someone close that stall next to you, knock on it and say, hey, have you heard the good news of Synthaholics?
Have you heard Synthaholics? And then, like, Write Synthaholics down on a slip of toilet paper.
Or just write it on the stall.
And with your feces. Synthaholics. That will share the word. Don't do that.
Like, what is that?
Don't do that.
You should use a permanent marker like all the regular people do.
And if you do write Synthaholics in your own feces in a stall, please take an Instagram picture and post it to us, because I'd love to see that.
And then we can link it to that Klingon picture.
That'd be awesome. You know, if someone actually did that, I think I'd make my year.
2017 is set for Aaron if you get the feces Synthaholics picture. That is fantastic. If you want to support us financially, you can check us out on Patreon.
Much better.
Patreon.com/Synthaholics, where we do our best to provide some extra content on there as we are able to. With commentaries and whatnot. So, yeah, check it out. And if you have other suggestions on what you'd like to see us do, maybe send some suggestions. Because, I mean, we haven't really updated that thing in over a year, so.
Yeah, you know, if you have something you want to say or you want to, like, hey, totally disagree with us or say, hey, I don't like to write and shit on bathroom stalls, any of that stuff, or if you want to bring in, if you're a lawyer and you have something to say about.
This episode, yeah, especially. If you've got a lawyer or a lawyer friend who's seen the episode and has something to say, like, have them email us, or if you're a lawyer yourself, email us at SentTheHolics@Yahoo.com.
It doesn't have to be a long email. You could just say, hey, you know, I saw this and blah, blah, blah. I thought this, and the reason for this, and the, you know, whatever. You know, it could be real quick, you know, like a quick paragraph.
It'd be so fun to muse. I mean, even if you're not a lawyer, if you have musings of this episode, we'll be happy to read it on the air as well. Because listen to episode 100. That's what we do when we have, if we get enough email all at once, we could just devote entire episodes to just reading email and playing audio clips. We could do this something like this more often if you guys want to send us stuff that you're thinking about or stuff about past episodes, because I mean, I personally had a huge blast, like, coming to the table with nothing but stuff you gave us and just being able to, like, talk about it or think about things from our own lives that are related to Star Trek that you made us think about.
Absolutely. And as we mentioned too before, we are going into our third season of Synthaholics, and we are going to redo our beginning of our episode. So
the songs will still be the same, the Sky part will still be the same, but the word Synthaholics I want to change. I want to maybe add Synthaholics or maybe Synthaholics a Star Trek podcast. So send us your voice clip saying Synthaholics twice, and then say Synthaholics a Star Trek podcast twice, because I might just, like.
And you can just do that by just, you know, take your phone. Most phones have an auto recorder, record it, and then just you can email it to us at synthaholics@yahoo.com.
And I'll do my best to combine them, put them together, and make it sound as Borg-like as it possibly can, because I want to do something fun for season 3 to make it sound a little bit different. We've got like 6 different intro songs, but I want to make the little clip before them different. So hopefully it'll be fun.
Well, hey, you know, thanks so much for coming aboard, listening to our episodes, having some fun with us. We do enjoy having you around. We enjoy talking about Star Trek.
We enjoy talking to you on Facebook, on our group, so keep on the stuff you do.
Keep on keeping on.
And as far as Patreon goes, you can also check out Guy at Patreon.com/GSDavisArt. You can support his artwork there because he's an amazing artist, and he joins us whenever he gets a chance, so support him. He's a great guy.
He's a good guy. Good art. Witches of Flames. U.S. Timberland.
And Synthaholics Podcast will join us every now and then on. So, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for being here for episode 100. Thank you again for all the submissions and even the late ones. It was great getting to do some more listener feedback on this episode as well. So thank you again all so much for that. Live long and prosper, everyone. Have a great week. Shit up, pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
He's in the bathroom stall.
Stop sticking your dick in.